Yeah, it's okay. Hi, I'm Ronnie, an alcoholic. Sometimes they call me Robert, it's okay. Never mind. So, yes, I've been asked to speak tonight. I just want to say thank you for that. So, my name is Ronnie. I am 47 years old. Was born in Puerto Rico, raised until I was seven, got here. We moved to the Carrollwood area, Northdale area, around 1980. I have two older siblings, two older sisters. I'm the youngest, my mother and father. So it was a loving home I grew up in. My parents were what you'd say like old hippies, like they partied, like weekend warriors. They both have jobs, you know, like, but usually let us kids like have a lot of free time. Sometimes I think too much free time is probably what got me in a lot of trouble. So for me, around like when it started, it was around 15 years of age. I met my best friend who lived across the street, and basically his mother had a huge liquor cabinet, and we used to go in there and you know, take some of her liquor, you know, just enough to where she wouldn't notice it. And in turn, my mother and father would smoke pot, so I would take some of that and he would take some of the liquor, and then we'd, you know, go get high. And that's how it all started for me. It was amazing. You know, I was like, wow, this is great. You know, finally like found something that was just made me feel comfortable. You know, I was a little bit of a shy kid until I found alcohol and, you know, weed. So as the years went on, my older sisters had boyfriends come through the house. Some weren't so good. One introduced me to cocaine, and that was an adventure. Never forget that feeling either. I was like, wow, now I could like you know, drink a lot more. And so basically, that just progressed through the years. My drinking, you know, became like every weekend, and then it started going through during the week. Got to junior high school, met my wife, and then yeah, we've been together for forever. To this day, I don't know how she's still with me, but she is. So it was around like 1990s, you know, the rave scene, you know, the ecstasy scene came out back in the day, and that's how I got introduced to all acid and rolling and all that other stuff. Yeah. And then just years progressed. I've got really well at hiding it. I've always held a job. Never really got in much trouble, besides, you know, at least I could say I never got caught. But I got really good at hiding, you know, my addictions, you know, I should say. So basically, as the years went on, I got a DUI in 1995. Decided one night to get really, really hammered, really high, drunk. Started driving down Waters Avenue, fucking passed the cop real fast. And then he started to pull me over. I thought it was a good idea to, I had a truck, you know, the bench seats. So I thought it was a good idea just to throw the quart in the back of the bench seat before it pulled over without the top. So when he pulled me over, the beer was like, you know, spilling out the side. So that was my first experience getting arrested and getting a DUI. So after that, just dealt with that, kept going through the years. You know, progressing, you know, with the weed, the alcohol, but still managed to keep a job, you know. I would say maybe for me, you know, my consequences weren't so, and you know, bad to where, you know, I had to say, oh my God, I gotta stop right now. But it took me a long time to get to these rooms, 47 years old. You know, what really got me here, to be totally honest with you guys, was I started doing a lot of a lot of coke and drinking a lot, you know, and then a lot, but I was kind of hiding it and got really good at it. But it got to the point where I guess the stuff that I was getting must have been like laced with something. Anyways, I ended up getting a stroke, you know. That was my wake-up call. At least I thought it was, but it wasn't. And then I got a stroke that morning. I remember, I'll never forget it. I was in a dead sleep, and I woke up about 4 in the morning, and I noticed myself just breathing a little weird, you know, like heaving, like, you know. And I'm like, man, that's not normal. But I went back to bed, you know. And then when I woke up, you know, I got up, and I went to the bathroom, and as I crossed the mirror, I noticed, like, my face was, like, half of it was, like, melted like that. I'm like, what the fuck? My arm was, like, totally numb, so I'm just thinking maybe I slept on, you know, the wrong side or something. And then so I tried to shake it off for a minute, and then I went back in front of the mirror. I'm saying, holy shit, this is not normal. And then I went to go speak my first words, and it was just, like, slurring like this. So I freaked out, and then I just said, babe, you know. Hey, there's something wrong with me, like that. And then I remember thinking, oh my God, if I have to stay like this and look like this, I'm gonna fucking kill myself. No way I'm gonna walk through life looking like this. So anyways, ended up going to the emergency room. She took me there. I didn't wanna go because I knew what was gonna happen. I was gonna get to the emergency room and then the doctor was gonna be like, you know, can you pee in this cup for me? And then I already knew, you know, I was done. So anyways, that's what happened, you know. My wife was sitting right there, and she had no idea, you know, because I've gotten really good at hiding it from her. I got really good at fucking hiding shit. So they asked me to piss in a cup. I was like, fuck. So about 15 minutes later, half an hour later, the doctor comes back and goes, so, Ronald, what have you been doing? I'm like, fuck, I just said it. I said, I've been doing coke. And then my wife, I looked over, saw my wife's face. She's like, you motherfucker. And I was like, fuck, I'm caught. I'm gonna fucking, here it is. So basically the doctor said that, you know, I need to either quit or next time your strokes might be permanent or you might die. So stayed in the hospital for about a week, ended up going home, and then stayed sober for about 3 weeks. And about the third week, that voice, you know, like that fucking voice just came in my head, man. It was just saying, you know, you could have, you know, a drink. And it started with a drink and then smoking the pot, because I had a little pot hidden still. And I said, okay, I could do that. And then lo and behold, you know, I started right back on the coke again. And then it was like one night I came home, I was so trashed that I had like a gram of coke in my pocket. And I don't even know how I got home. All, you know, I swear the grace of God was looking out for me. So I must have dropped it on the bathroom floor, and then next thing I know, I went to sleep. And then I wake up at a dead sleep, the wife slamming doors, coming back and forth, you know, and I'm waking up, what the fuck's going on here? And then she's pissed off, and I'm like, you know, what the fuck did I do? And then she's like, you motherfucker, you fucking lied, you know. So that turned into a whole big argument, fight. She told me to get the fuck out. I tried to lie until she actually took a picture of it before she flushed it on the toilet. It was like a bag of coke. And then she decides to text my whole family. So that day I'm like, shit, started getting texts from my mom, my cousins, I mean, fucking everybody. I'm like a very private person, you know, I hate like people just getting my business and shit. So yeah, I started getting all those texts and phone calls, and basically, you know, I started getting pressured. So I went out on a bender, still held my job, and on my bender, I had like a moment, man, like a God moment. I was like, I was on the verge. You know what? I'm fucking tired of this shit. I was thinking about killing myself. So I did, what do I want to do? Do I want to fucking get help, or do I want to fucking die? You know, I knew what was going to happen if I kept going. So I decided to go to Turning Point. Didn't want to go, but I did. Made myself go. I really went there to really get my family back and to get them off my back. But as I was there at Turning Point, I got to say that I really, really had a God moment there. It took me about 3 weeks in before I finally realized that, you know, shit, you know, this disease is real, you know. It really got a hold of me. And it was a turning point where I finally got educated there, and I decided to, you know, to give it a shot. I remember my therapist telling me, where else are you going to have, like, you know, 30 days to, like, work on yourself to escape the, you know, the world, you know? And then he also said, don't make no mistake, your disease is out there doing push-ups waiting for your ass to get out of here, too. So, you know, I mean, I learned a lot there. But there, I really decided to turn my will and my life over. I remember coming here on the druggy buggy, they called it, you know, they used to ship us around to meetings, and I saw all these guys here. I saw Terry, I saw Chris, and I saw, you know, how, like, clear-headed they were, and, like, fucking, you know, laughing and shit, and I'm like, you know, I came in here looking real broken, you know, came up to Chris, hey, Chris, can you sponsor me? And Chris has just looked at me, he's like, okay, you know, sure, you know, like, but I was definitely wanted what they had, so I was, I'll be forever grateful that I found them and found AA, because, you know, because if it wasn't for this place, man, I would not be where I am today. I'm going to hit 6 months next week. I haven't been 6 months sober since I was 15 years old, man. Like, it's fucking crazy. I mean, my whole life I was either smoking weed, I was doing something to escape, because reality for me was hard. I fucking hated reality. I hated people. I hated, you know, it was really hard. But coming here and reading the big book and all that shit, you know, the big book, I felt like it was written for me, you know, like the part where it says, like, alcoholics have the amazing ability to get, like, the best spouse, you know, the best partner in the world, you know. And I was thinking, man, that's me, you know, because by the grace of God, she hasn't left my ass yet, you know. But I think this is the last straw. I don't know. But you never know, you know. But I definitely have to say that I'm super grateful for, you know, this program. It does work, and it really does. And if you're someone that's really not, you know, putting their heart and soul into this, I just got to say that, you know, just give it a shot, man, because it will work for you, man. So yeah, that's, I'm real appreciative. I was asked to speak tonight, and very appreciative of this place, man. That's all I got, guys.
Thank you, Ronnie. Oh, that was actually on mute. Again, thank you, Ronnie. And our group has asked our very own Terry to be the next speaker.
Hey, guys, I'm Terry. I'm an alcoholic. Shit, there's somebody on Zoom. Oh, it's Paul. Hey, Paul. It's one of the guys I sponsor who doesn't go to any meetings. My sobriety date's June 6, 2016. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring other men in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them's here, one of them's listening, so I'm not going to say anything good about that. Ronnie, thank you so much. I relate it to a lot of your talk. I've never fallen asleep while there was still Coke left. That's fucking weird to me, dude. I don't know how you do that. But at any rate, that's all I'm going to say about drugs. If you're here tonight and you're not sure if you belong or not, none of that matters, right? The DUIs and the broken marriages and the you know, whether you were ever homeless or not, that doesn't mean anything to us. All that matters is that you develop an uncertainty of what's going to happen when you start to put alcohol in your body. You don't know what happens next. And once you get going, a craving beyond your control takes over, and then you stop, right? Because it happens. The thing happens, and you stop, and you stay stopped for a little bit, and you're probably, like, pretty irritable and pissed off if you're anything like me. And then you figure it out, right? Like, what the broken variable was. And you rebuild the equation, and you set back out to prove everybody wrong, including yourself. You take a drink knowing that this time I got it, and it all happens again. And it's a vicious cycle that we live within, man. And without, in my experience, without a higher power and people like you guys, I don't stand a chance. Going to give you a heads up. My talk's going to be weird as hell tonight. I'm in a weird place in life, right? Like, we just adopted a 20-year-old kid that we don't really know that well. And my kid just got home from being in jail for a long time. And he's like, we don't really know him that well either. Things are just, you know, that's sobriety, right? And then the other part is that 6 years and a day ago, I came home from work and... came home from work, 6.5 years sober, active in a home group, sponsored others, had service commitments, and I showed up at the house with a six-pack of Yingling and an airplane bottle of Jameson, you know. And I was forever grateful for this home group and for Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't, you know. I truly hope that you hold on to that. That's not my experience. I'm not always grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a taker, right? Like, I'm just a loser and a taker in life. And it carries over to here, right? So, you know, my story is very similar. I had tried alcohol a couple times. I always forget about this when I talk because nothing happened, right? Like, I had two experiences where I put alcohol into my body and no effect took place, right? I didn't want to continue to drink. I wasn't like, the phenomenon of craving didn't set in, right? And then what happened is senior year of high school, right? I got life in the palm of my hands. I have a bunch of opportunities to do cool stuff. And what happens is, it's like, I get tired of only being able to get girlfriends on the internet, you know? So I'm like, I need to get one of these like cheerleaders that my friends have. And I show up to a party with some Smirnoff Ice and handing them out. And this dude was like, it's weird that you're not drinking. So I was like, all right, I'll drink, you know? And I took a sip of Smirnoff Ice and it was delicious. It went down easy. So I just started throwing those babies back, you know? And I left there and I was going somewhere else. And you know, who I was, God, it's absolutely ridiculous how my son is now the spitting image of this. But I'm like sitting in this car and I got like a do-rag on and a wife beater, baggy jeans. I'm like bumping 50 Cent, smoking a Black and Mild. And I catch myself in the mirror and I'm like, dude, you look good. Tonight's the night, baby, you know? Like, and what's, so it's funny, right? Because it's absolutely ridiculous, you know? And I watch my son walk out of the house confidently like that every day. But, you know, here's the deal, though. Is that was important because that was the first time I had hope. Like, I had hope and ambition and, like, drive in that moment, you know? I was free finally, right? Because the deal was, it's like back at the single wide trailer that I grew up in, my dad wasn't around because he was working overtime, right? Because he had a wife who was addicted to pills and we never knew if she was going to be awake or not at any given point in the day. And my sister was gone across the country to escape a gang lifestyle, right? And get her life back together. And none of that shit mattered, right? I didn't care what anybody thought about me. I just like finally could breathe, you know? And I showed up to school on Monday and people were like, dude, you're a wild man. That was awesome. You remember streaking through Country Way? And I'm like, shit, you know? But they thought it was funny. So I was like, okay, cool. Friday night after the game, we're going to do it again, you know? And it was a Friday night after the game thing. And then it was a Friday night and a Saturday night thing. And then somehow, like, I don't even know how it got here, but I remember we had like a big test or exam coming up. And a friend called me to ask how studying was going. And I was drinking a 12-pack of Bud Light in my bedroom by myself. And she was like, what are you doing? You know? And I didn't realize that that was abnormal. I didn't know that they weren't doing that. I thought we were all doing that, you know? It struck me. I was like, ooh, okay, maybe that is weird, right? And what happened is in a span of from September of 2002 to May of 2003, I lost three scholarships. Right? I got, you know, asked not to show up to my athletics anymore. And all I did was just like lower my bar, right? To meet my behavior. That's it. And you hear that talked about in AA. I just like, my ambitions and goals just met my behavior. And as it got lower and lower and lower, I was okay with it because I now have my thing, man. It's really what the deal was. I now had the thing that I've been looking for, that window out into like the most beautiful landscape ever. Which is just being able to take a deep breath for me, right? Problem is the window gets smaller and smaller over time, right? And it gets harder and harder to capture that that deep breath. And all my friends went off to college and the military and, you know, whatever, right? They did the right things. And I developed a career of breaking into people's cars in the middle of the night in the neighborhood that I live in now, right? And stealing like their ashtray change and their radio or whatever I could find in there, you know? And all to get, you know, as long as I made enough to get like a bottle and a 12 pack of booze for the next, a beer for the next day, I was good. I was happy, right? Like that's what I had sunk to pretty quickly. And, you know, so towards the end of that summer, you know, like my drinking's becoming problematic. Like I get arrested at the Bone Crusher concert at Amalie Arena, except they didn't actually arrest me. They let me go, you know. I got in a fight with a bunch of people and they found, I still think they planted drugs on me because I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I woke up with like a citation in my pocket, you know. And then a few weeks later, my mom found some booze in my room and threw it away, and I came home and was like, you need to replace that. Who do you think you are? You know, I am an 18-year-old man. And she didn't agree with me. And I had some words for that lady that day that I regretted for the next 16 years, you know? Because a couple of days later, without getting to take those words back, she killed herself, you know? And it haunted me, man. It was bad. Right after that, this girl calls me and she's like, hey, you remember me? And I'm like, no. And she's like, well, we met on MySpace and I'm pregnant with your baby. And I was like, that's the kid that I'm talking about running out the house, you know? Shit, okay, I gotta get my act together and I'm gonna be a dad, yay, you know? And the deal was, I was just incapable, right? Like I was incapable and I couldn't tell you that. I couldn't articulate, I tried, right? I try to go get a good career going. So I fill out an application at Finish Line and showed up for like 2 weeks, you know, and couldn't do it, you know. And that's what my career looked like, is I would show up to these jobs for 2-3 weeks and I just can't do it, you know. And it's because like most of those jobs I couldn't be drunk at, you know, and that didn't really jive with my lifestyle. And my life like quickly turned into Groundhog's Day, man, where I'd wake up and like I'd have this feeling that I did something the night before, but I didn't know what it was. I'm blessed with blackouts, right? Have no clue what it was, but I just like know somebody is really pissed off at me today, right? And then like whatever girl I was just taking from at the time for a place to live, I would be like, hey, look, so tonight it's not going to go down like that. I'm going to come home, make dinner, watch a movie, we're gonna go to bed, and nothing crazy. And like, I would see that hope that I had every time I drink light up in their eyes, right? And then I would go to work, and I worked in restaurants because they were like conducive to my schedule, you know? I didn't have to wake up till 2 o'clock. The last restaurant I worked at fed us every day, and it was like good food, you know? So that was like my one meal of the day, was whatever the restaurant had for us. Somewhere like in the first like change of tables, right? So like 7 o'clock is when I would figure it out. You know, like if I just hadn't drank this, or if I just didn't take this much money in, or I wasn't hanging out with that guy, if I didn't go to this bar, that wouldn't have happened. And I rebuild the equation and I set out to prove it, right? Like let's test this hypothesis. And I would set out to do it and it would happen again, right? Lights flashing, last call. I need to go grab a six pack from 7-Eleven real quick just so I can go to sleep tonight and wake up with that pit in my stomach the next day. And it just kept happening like that. And I tried a bunch of stuff to curb it, you know? Like I went to church without telling anybody for a little bit, you know? And nothing against church, man. They were helping a lot of people, just not me. They didn't know, they didn't have the answer for a guy like me, right? And I tried going to the gym. That lasted very not long at all. I got on Google and I like looked up how to stop drinking, and I came across this thing about like identifying your triggers and avoiding them, right? Here's the problem. My triggers are fucking everything, right? The sun goes down, the sun goes up, it's hot, it's cold, it's just kind of nice, it's raining, it's not raining, right? It's Monday through Sunday, like everything triggered me and made me think about drinking. That's because none of that was the problem. The problem was that I was broken internally, man. Like, I had a spiritual illness that was only getting worse, and nothing was checking it. And man, I'm like in and out of jails. I'm in and out of, you know, court, losing jobs, getting jobs. And you know what's funny is, like, the one thing I'd always hear is, Terry, you have so much potential. And I took it as a compliment. It's not. They told me, Terry, you could be good, but you suck. Over and over and over. And they were right. You know what I mean? I ran away from Tampa. I thought Tampa was the problem. I ran to Philly. I found out that, like, you can get drunk in Philly too, you know? And I found a place that I fucking loved. I took Jesse there in 2012 and I was so disappointed because they had, like, cleaned the place up, you know? But back then I walked into that place and, like, you could hear your shoes sticking to the floor and there was, like, smoke just hanging out about eye level. And, like, they had a nice menu of, like, some hot dogs on a little grill right by the door, and you could get a big thing of Yingling and a rocks glass full of Jameson for $8, man. And I was like, hell yeah, I am home, you know? And we took a trip up there, and my feet didn't stick to the floor, and there was no smoke, and they had, like, an actual restaurant menu, I think. And I was like, let's go. I don't really want to be here, you know? But, you know, those types of places, Bilmar Station and Town of Cut, like, those, that's my home, dude, right? Like, the dirtier and grungier it is, like, the lower the standards, like, man, that's all for me. That's how I drink, you know? And ran to Philly, came back, bouncing on couches, and what happened is I picked up the phone, and I called my mom's best friend one morning, and her husband answered, and somehow we got to talking about my problems, right? And I'm telling them what my problems really are, which are, I need more money, I need a nicer place, I need a better job, I need a vehicle, right? I need my kid's mom to stop being such a bitch. And this dude, like, listened to it all, and then he said, hey, tell me about your drinking. And I was like, what does that have to do with this, you know? But what happened is I told him the truth. I said, I can't stop. Every time I drink, I can't stop. And every time I want to, like, stay sober, it doesn't work. At one point in Philly, I was lying to everybody at work, telling them I was going to AA. What I was really doing is going and drinking in a part of town called the Gayborhood, where I knew none of them would go, right? And I would sit at these gay bars every night and drink by myself, right? And I was telling people that I was sober, and one guy was keeping track. He was like, hey, you got like 30 days. I was like, I got 30 days. And he was like, cool, did you pick up a chip? And I was like, what's that, you know? And he knew, because he had been to AA before. He knew about the chips, and I didn't, right? So the gig was up, you know? So I was like, all right, well, let's go to Oscar's Tavern tonight. Now that you all know, I don't have to go over there anymore. But this guy 12-stepped me, man, over the phone. And he laid out that he had gotten a sponsor at Alcoholics Anonymous who he took the 12 steps out of the big book with, and he got a home group. He got a service commitment. And he went to a meeting every day for 90 days. And I was like, dude, that sounds really cool. I don't think there's any meetings around here, though. And he laughed, right? Because he had been to meetings. He came down here for my mom's funeral, and every night he disappeared. And I thought he went to the bar. He looks like a drinking guy, right? He was at 3333 every night while he was in town. And he told me right where it was, 3333 West Columbus. And I was like, oh, shit. He's like, call my bluff here, you know? But something he had said, whatever it was he had said that night, I wanted to come meet you guys. Right? In that moment, I really wanted to come meet you guys. And I told him, I'm going to go to that 3333 tonight. I'll let you know how it goes. And what happened is I still had some Captain Morgan left, and I wasn't quite ready. Right? I hadn't hit that jumping off point yet. And a week later, I come out of a blackout. I'm in South Carolina running from cops, and took a little vacation up there in Effingham County Jail and then Clarendon County Jail. Got to the judge, and I did what I do, right? I'm a slick talking manipulator, you know, and talked the judge out of sending me to prison for 10 years, and I took a exile from the state of South Carolina instead, which I was like, whatever, dude, like, I don't care. I don't want to come to South Carolina. It's all good, you know? And I left South Carolina, and I had been promising everybody I was gonna stay sober, right? And I got out of jail, and I wound back up in Tampa, Florida, right here in downtown Tampa. And about 2-3 hours later, I was drunk again. And I literally watched, like, I had a bunch of friends show up to welcome me home. And I literally watched them turn around and walk out as soon as I took that first drink, right? I was like, that's weird. But it happened again. I drank just like I had 6.5 months before, and I didn't know, how have I not figured this out? Why is it not different? I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And I lived on the streets for a couple weeks, and my dad put me in a motel. And one night, man, I just picked up the phone, and I dialed a phone number that I hadn't dialed in, I think, 4 years at that time. And this was like in the cell phone era, right? Just picked up the phone, and boom, 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 boom. I could tell you the number right now, right? And this guy answered the phone, and I said, I need to get sober. And he said, I don't care if you need to get sober. Do you want to? To this day, I'm not really sure what the difference is, but I think there was something important in that, which was I willing to get sober? Was I willing to take the action, right? And he showed up, and he picked me up, and there was something different about him. Not a whole lot, but a little bit, right? And he brought me over to Club Yana, and there was an old guy from Kentucky in overalls telling his story up there. And he was talking about being at the bar and seeing a girl with puke on her shirt, and him thinking she's the one. And I was like, yes, you know, I get that, you know? And he talked about wet in his pants, and I was like, yes, I get that. And then he talked about having a higher power restore him to sanity, and I was like, don't know what you're talking about, champ. I checked out, right there and then, I checked out. I was gone for the rest of the meeting. And, you know, the guy that brought me shoved me out of my seat to go and get a white chip. I didn't really know what was going on, because remember, I don't know about chips. I got a white chip, and then we held hands, and we got in a circle, and we prayed, and then we chanted, and I almost jumped out of my skin. We have to stop doing that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to use this opportunity to spread my message. It is weird, right? If you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and some dude grabs your hand, and he's like, come pray, and then he chants, it's fucking weird, man. Like, I wonder how many people we've run out of here, you know? But at any rate, What I figured out in the moment was, this ain't about me. There's something going on here that's way bigger than me, right? So I promptly went out to the end of the parking lot at Yana, and I was just smoking cigarettes, trying to look busy and unapproachable. And these three dorks just walked up on me, man. They just walked up on me, and they were like, hey, I'm Ryan. How are you? Hey, I'm Lloyd. How are you? Hey, I'm Ryan. I was like, is everybody, you're like, what do you want, you know? And they told me that they were going to visit their friend in the hospital because he had shattered his leg in a vicious moped accident, you know. And I was like, this is what we do on Sunday nights, guys? This is what we got going on? I'm good. I don't think I need this, you know. But what happened is, one of them took me to Starbucks on Howard, and he sat me down and he told me about alcoholism, what it is, what it really means, and what the hopes are for me, right? And the thing that got me was that he described three options for a guy like me: jails, institutions, or death, right? I'd done two of them, right? Two of them, like, I'd done quite a few times. The third one was the only one left for a guy like me. I was like, okay, all right, I think I could do this. And you know, he showed up the next night, and then the night after that, Lloyd showed up, and Lloyd would just, like, show up to my job, and he would sit outside. I didn't even tell them where I worked, right? They figured it out. And he would just sit outside at 5 o'clock. And I would come out, and I'd be like, Lloyd, what do you want? I'm going home. And he'd be like, nah, man, we're going to a meeting. Come on, jump in, you know? And I would just get in the car. And way faster than anything I deserve, my life got put back together, right? First, I had a little tiny place of my own. And then we had a house on Davis Island. And there were five of us guys that lived there. And, you know, we had parties every night and fires. And we burned stuff and set off fireworks and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And but some really cool shit happened in that backyard, man. I met my wife back there. She was brand new. I was like, hey, you want to watch a movie? You know, like, it was weird. We were both brand new sober, man, and we were crazy as shit, you know, but we ran around and did Alcoholics Anonymous together. You know, that was the important thing. She wasn't even sober. She was showing up, right? And bigger than that, I can't tell you how many guys took a fifth step on that back patio. It was like, people that didn't even live there would show up with sponsees to our backyard to hear a fifth step. To read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with another guy. And that was like amazing to me, right? And I moved out of there and I moved in with my sponsor, right? And his sponsor. And I got to watch those two guys, how they lived. We're really, I don't give a shit what people say in Alcoholics in a meeting, right? Open discussion, whatever, speaker meetings. I don't care. It's so easy to sound good and look good up here. It's so good to, like, easy to quote the big book, right? Or relate some, like, heart-wrenching experience. You want to see what somebody's program is really like? Get in their house. Follow them to work. track them at the gas station or the grocery store. You'll see what somebody's program is really, really like. And I got to watch that up close with these two dudes, right? I got to see what it really looked like. And taught me a lot, man. Flew up to the Virginia area that first year I was sober for men's events. And we went out to a diner that Sunday night after the Midtown group. And some guys were like, hey, let's do this back in Florida. And they let me be a part of that, man. And we've been able to do it every year except last year, you know. And it's been one of the most magical, like, I can't tell you how much I look forward to it. Like, I guess I don't have an announcement in here, but man, February 25th through 27th, we're going down to Sebring, Florida, and everything else doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that we're going down there to talk about the 12 steps, take inventory with our sponsors, to listen to some dude babble all weekend. If you care what he says, cool. If not, also cool, right? But it's been the most amazing thing that I've gotten to be a part of in my life. And my life got put back together. I got to see my kid like every other, or like once a month. And then it was like every other weekend. And then it was like summers, and then like part of Christmas, and then like for a couple weeks over Christmas break. And then he came to live with us, man. And like, I couldn't believe it, you know? And you know, I was working with my grant sponsor, had like a cool ass job that I really liked. You know, I asked Jesse to marry me, and she said yes for some reason. And you know, and we hosted the Florida Conference of Young People in AA, and I was the voice of the conference. And the first night, Friday night, I get up there, and there's like 1,000 people screaming, and the music's loud and everything. And I got up to the thing, and I looked out, and I was like, you're not an alcoholic, Terry. What are you doing here? And I was like, oh, that's weird. I haven't heard that thought in a while. It's been a minute since that's happened. And then it like started to like get claws and dig in. And I went to talk to one guy about it after my home group a couple weeks later. And I told him, like, man, I don't know that I'm alcoholic. I'm starting to think that it was like I was young and I had some emotional trauma and just no responsibility or maturity. I think I'd be fine today. And he went, that's just alcoholism. And he walked away. And I was like, damn, that's all I get. You know, so I kept it to myself from there. And 6 months later, you know, 6 years and a day ago, showed up at home with some booze. And let's test this out. And on that day, my sponsor's baby was born. He had just adopted his second daughter. And my wife didn't know what the hell to do with me. And I would continue to drink, you know, normally. And she asked me to stop. So I stopped drinking at home. And I took a work trip in March to Arizona. And my drinking looked just like it really does. The truth came out, right? There was no need for control and enjoy. It was just enjoy, baby, you know? Woke up from a blackout and was like, oh shit, I did it. Bro, what do we do? And I called one of my guys and he was like, just chalk it up to a bad night, man. It's all good. So okay. So a couple months went by and during this time, from like March 2016, I think it was. I'm glad he's not here. My sponsor's little baby got brain cancer. And a few of us would just go to the hospital, man. We would just go sit at the hospital. I went every night. Every night. I wasn't even sober. But AA meant that much to me. That guy meant that much to me. And I would just sit in the waiting room, you know. And they'd come out and we'd take walks or I'd go get them coffee or cigarettes or whatever, you know. And you know, then in June, I went down to Miami and... for a work thing, and it happened again, right? And I come out of this blackout, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I think it's real, right? And I guess in that blackout, I had messaged one of the members of the Miami Young People's Group, like, I think I need help, you know? And my grand sponsor was there, and he was like, hey, we're gonna go to dinner with a couple of the people that we know from down here. Are you cool with that? And I was like, I can handle a couple people. He lied to me. He set me up. It was bullshit. He took me to that guy who I sent the text message to. It was his anniversary dinner. And I showed up and there was like 40 people there and he told them all about the text message, right? So they were just like foaming at the mouth to 12 step me. And they tried, man. And like, they were like pulling out all stops. One dude was like, hey bro, look, as long as you're not banging hookers and, you know, like shooting cocaine, you're fine. And I was like, sweet, I'm good. I can continue, you know? And then one dude who we watched go in and out for a decade, I think, maybe more, he got me. That was on June 6, 2016. I'm emotional because he passed away October 2016. Because that message that he delivered to me, he had not held on to himself, right? And he talked to me about having pride and ego stand between him and any hope of staying sober. And that's exactly what I had going on in my world, right? And I got home and I was like trying to figure out a way to tell Jess. And some bullshit happened that night. I had to drive to Orlando or something. And she calls me, "Were you drunk in Miami?" And I was just like, "Yeah." "So were you drunk in Arizona?" "Yeah, I was. I'm going to go pick up a white chip tomorrow." And I did. I went to Yana and I picked up a white chip at the noon meeting. And then I showed up here that Thursday. And you guys were like, "Hey, the speakers aren't working. And we have a question about the bank account and the nonprofit corporate registration. We need you to come answer it." And I was like, no, I'm just here to pick up a white chip, man. Leave me alone, right? And on that day, though, I like called my sponsor, right, to tell him, like, I'm back, you know. And he didn't answer. This little baby was on her last leg. And on June 10th, that baby passed on, you know, to the next life. And he called me and he said, "Hey, look, can you call another guy? Keep current with an inventory until I bury my little baby, and then we'll get back into the book." And I was like, "Yeah." And sure shit, a couple weeks later, right after the funeral, he called me up and he was like, "Bring your big book over." We got right into an inventory, right away, man. He put me into an inventory. And my home group, the first time I showed up, they didn't let me just sit in the back and drink some coffee and then leave, right? They put me right in the middle of the boat because they knew a guy like me, I'm a runner, right? They knew how big that door was for me, and they stuck me right in the middle of this thing. And so I wasn't happy to be here. Let me just cover that. I was not happy to be sober. I wasn't, yay, you know, no pink cloud, right? But a guy that I had sponsored before I left AA called me up and said, "Hey, sponsor." And I was like, no, I'm like 2 days sober, bro. You got to chill. And he made it clear that that was not an option. I was going to continue to sponsor him. He called me when I was drunk with his inventory. I don't know what the hell he was thinking. But I got back into a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. In spite of my feelings, in spite of my selfish wants and things I want to do, I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous and got involved in my home group, got involved in a Wednesday night 12 and 12 meeting that we had going on. And started to make amends for the damage that I had done, even the damage that I didn't see, you know. Started to get some help with that shit that haunted me with my mother, you know. Started to be able to breathe again and sleep again and eat and things like that. And the deal is this, is that I'm like a do-it-yourselfer type of guy, right? Except for like manual labor, I pay people for that. But like when it comes to problems and navigating life, I'd rather do this all on my own because I think I'm really smart. Zero evidence of that, but I think so, you know. And what I found is that my life is just so much better when I incorporate you all in it, right? In every facet of it, no matter what it is, right? And part of that means caring about my home group, right? Try to care about my home group as much as possible, not just on Thursday night, on Tuesday night. Mark and I talk about this home group often outside of this meeting, right? You know, stuff like that. And man, I've been so blessed. I've been so like blessed beyond measure, anything I deserve, right? My family's put back together. We've even added in this knucklehead, you know. We've started like rescuing squirrels, and like I have this crazy hobby. I like figured out how to feed a squirrel nuts out of my mouth today, which is just like fucking ridiculous, you know. And I've gotten to like develop hobbies and interests, like started diving a year ago, and now I'm like a dive master, you know, and like going swimming around with sharks and doing this ridiculous stuff. We're going to Honduras in 2 weeks. Like, bro, I'm a 9-time felon. I was out on Kennedy Boulevard begging for money. I remember it. It wasn't even that long ago, you know? And now I have this life that's so far beyond anything I ever even wanted, you know? I wouldn't have drawn this up. This wasn't it, you know? 20, 22, 23 years old, this was not the picture I had for me, you know? But my life's better than I could have ever asked for, and it boils down to a few simple things. I just go with the flow here, man. I do what you guys do. I bitch and moan a lot about what you're doing. If Marlon has anything to do with it, I object, right? But like, the deal is when the group makes a decision, I go with it, whatever it is, you know. And if there's so many better examples out in front of me here that I just get to follow. All I got to do is try to like mimic what they got going on, and my life just continues to get better. And the coolest thing is this. You hear the 9-step promises read at all these meetings, right? And they get to that line where they say, are these extravagant promises to this day? I say, yes, those are. Those are ridiculously extravagant promises for a guy like me. But then one night, some cat at 3333 just like went rogue, right? He like exercised the right of decision. And he did the 10-step promises. And the 10-step promises said, by this time, sanity will have returned. And I was like, what's that? And then it talked about, we've ceased fighting anything, even alcohol. And I was like, tell me more. It's all I want. And today I have all that and more, man. It's because of you guys. Thank you.